You're listening to Packers Talk Network. PackersTalk.com.
You're listening to No Huddle Radio on the Packers Talk Radio Network, your home for in-depth and thoughtful Packers analysis. I'm your host, Gil Martin. My co-host is my good friend, Sean Tian. In addition to this show, I write for the PackersPost.com and Cheesehead TV. And Sean was a TV sportscaster in Minnesota. We're here to talk Packers because you're all here for one thing, and that's a love for Green Bay football. Sean, big game coming up Monday night. Trade deadline's in the rearview mirror. We got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, we sure do, Gil. And hey, that Monday night game, it's at Lambeau Field. Lambeau wasn't super fun on Sunday, the loss to the Carolina Panthers. We'll get into that in just a bit. But if you want to get to the game, though, this Monday night coming up, big game against the defending Super Bowl champs, Wisconsin's own Ticket King can help. They sponsor our show, and for more than 30 years, they've been providing Packers tickets to Packer fans, as well as Bucks, Brewers, and Summerfest tickets. Find them on the web at theticketking.com or visit their locations in Green Bay and Milwaukee. And you can watch every episode of No Huddle Radio on Packers Talk Network on YouTube. Go to YouTube, type Packers Talk Network in the search bar, click on the PackersTalk.com link with the green background and the yellow goalpost. Click on the bell to subscribe, turn notifications on, join the discussion, chat with us live. And Gil, I think there's a lot that we can really fester and argue about right now, where it's not argue necessarily, but there's a lot of discussion after the 16-13 loss on Sunday against the Carolina Panthers, a team that you should have beat. If you score just a little more in the red zone, you shouldn't have had a problem beating that team on Sunday. And now the big question is everyone's looking at Matt LaFleur, because you got to think where it's like, Ed Policy's non-committal on his future in Green Bay, now being the president of the Packers and being in charge. Gil, the main question right now for you, is Matt LaFleur on the hot seat?
I don't think it's a yes or no question. I think it's more like the seat is starting to heat up, but we're not there yet. But I think we've raised the temperature a little bit over the last few weeks. Let's put it that way. What is your feeling?
Oh, I think he's under surveillance for sure. Yeah. He's under surveillance. I don't think he's necessarily on the hot seat, though. The thing is, it's like, you got to look at the whole grand scheme of stuff, where the Packers right now, they still lead the division at 5-2-1. Now they got a lot of division games coming up. The toughest part of their schedule is in the later half of the season. So it's going to be a tough uphill battle moving forward. They're the youngest team in the NFL for a third straight year. They're top 10 in total offense and defense. But the constant problem this year has been where, and Matt LaFleur got a lot of criticism after Sunday's loss, which rightfully so. They just play down to the level of their opponents way too much. They messed around in Cleveland and lost a game that they probably should have won. Cleveland's defense was super dominant. So Cleveland, they played a great game on defense, and the offense just couldn't get anything going in that game overall. And then you look at Arizona a few weeks ago, where that was a team where everyone thought, oh, you should have really clobbered this team. But Arizona, they're 3-5, but they haven't lost a game by more than 4 points. They're in every single game. So I kind of understood that. But this felt inexcusable, though. The red zone issues were alarming on Sunday, and third down play calls, offense and defense, were alarming too. And defense, obviously, that's not Matt LaFleur. That's more on Jeff Hafley. But it was just kind of alarming. So it's like, if you're going scale 1 to 10, 10 being super secure, 1 being not secure at all, I think Matt LaFleur is at a 5 or maybe like a 6 at best right now. But I think he's closer to a 5.
I would put him at a 6, closer to maybe on the border between 6 and 7. But I think at the start of the season, he was around a 9. So I think we've seen some movement now. And look, ultimately, the job of a coach is to prepare his team and then to put them in the best position to do what they do best. And I don't think Matt LaFleur has necessarily done a great job of that this season. I mean, the first two games were great, but at no point this season do I think the offense has played to its potential.
No.
And the fact that they're still top 10 is great, but they've left so much on the table this year. The running game is not doing as well. The passing game is not consistent. The offensive line doesn't seem to know how to run block. There are issues, and the play calling is just driving people crazy. And you touched on third down play calling. I think it goes beyond that, because I think the play calling on first and second down is so darn predictable that it just does not allow the offense to operate at a high level, because it's run up the middle, third and, you know, six, third and four, got to throw. Jordan Love has done a pretty good job converting third downs into firsts, but we are kind of struggling to establish what this offense does best and execute it consistently.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's funny because third down offense, and we'll show it later in this episode, they're number two in third down offense this year, which is shocking, because I know there's a lot of criticism about the Carolina game where they went for it on fourth and eight. And I, you know, rightfully people could be mad about that, but I was more infuriated by the third down play call before that, where you had third and three, you don't even throw the ball down the field. And then you take a five-yard loss and trying to do a screen against a defense that clearly was dialed in on it all day. And it just seems like Matt LaFleur just kind of has a plan in place. And if it doesn't go according to plan, he kind of freaks out and with the play calling. And I don't know if you think he should give up play calling, but it just seems like there's tendencies that he has. And if you get him onto an unfamiliar path, it's doom and gloom then for the Packers offense.
I almost think that he outsmarts himself sometimes.
Yeah.
That he almost anticipates what he thinks the other side is going to do before they do it. And it's almost like he's countering before they respond. And sometimes it almost trips the Packers offense up a little bit. Football is a chess match. It's move and counter move. Mm-hmm. And you've got to have a plan B and a plan C. And if somebody gets injured, you may have to change the whole darn game plan altogether. Yeah. It's a real mess. It's a real mess right now.
Yeah. And you got to wonder too, where I think we'll know if Matt LaFleur is on the hot seat or not, depending on this back half of the season. You're playing the Giants in a few weeks where it's like, that should be a win, but you never know, because they just never seem to play clean in New York. A couple of years ago, they lost to Tommy Cutlets, you know. And then you got Philly obviously coming up this week, the defending Super Bowl champs coming off a bye. And then you have five division games. You have Denver also that you got to play. You got Baltimore, who's probably going to be at full strength at that point. You'd like to think, obviously, then they're within reach of their division, winning their division.
Everyone's
right now
in reach of that division, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, it's this back half of the season is going to determine if Matt LaFleur is going to have a job or not. But I do, the thing is though, it's like, it's easy to say like, oh, he should be fired, he should go. But it's like, what better option is available right now? And I don't know that off the top of my head, which is why I'd be resistant to be like, okay, like let's hold on. But let's keep an eye open though, for maybe someone else who could, you know, take control of this job.
The only solace I take with the tough schedule that you mentioned is that the team seems to get up for the tough opponents,
yes,
and play down to the bad opponents. Yep. So almost, I'm not saying I am, but it's like I'm almost more worried about the Giants than I am about the Eagles.
Yeah.
Because we will not necessarily play up to our potential against the Giants, but against the Eagles, we'll be psyched and ready. And even if we don't win, I think we'll play well or play better. But there is something about the leadership, whether it starts with the coach or whether it's in the locker room, they can't seem to just play complimentary football and get on, you know, hitting on all cylinders and moving and playing to their potential. And it's very frustrating to see that.
I mean, the second half of that game in Pittsburgh, where it's like, okay, this is yeah, what we envision this team being, where getting after the passer on defense, moving the ball in offense, and the offense that second half of Pittsburgh is like, okay, maybe this is a sign of things to come. And then they just, you know, one step forward, two steps back, you know, that's really just what it kind of felt like. And yeah, I think there's a lot of good things the Packers have done overall this year, but the negative stuff definitely shines a negative light, and it definitely looms larger than it should.
Yeah, it does. And I think it's just because this team leaves a bad taste in people's mouths, that they're just not doing what they're capable of doing. And look, you look at the big picture. This is the first 6 years under Matt LaFleur. They've made the playoffs five times. They've made the NFC Championship game twice. They've had, what, one losing season, and that was when Aaron Rodgers was playing with a broken thumb and just not playing well. So, you know, the overall record is really good, but now, you know, Brian Gutekunst did the urgency thing. He brings in Micah Parsons. It's supposed to be the last major piece of the puzzle, and the results feel very much the same. And that's what I think is frustrating a lot of people.
What's also frustrating, Gil, is that our tight end, Tucker Kraft, he's done for the season. He was on his way to possibly breaking a lot of Packer franchise tight end records this year. He Lambo leaped into my lap. He was having an incredible season, and now he tears his ACL against Carolina, and it's just a huge, it's just a huge downfall for the, it's a huge factor for the offense to lose a guy like that. How do the Packers replace Tucker Kraft?
With great difficulty. It really is going to have to be all hands on deck. And I think obviously the first guy you look at is Luke Musgrave. This is a big opportunity for him. He lost his starting job after he suffered the lacerated kidney in his rookie year. And Tucker Kraft has been so good that, you know, Musgrave never got it back. And this may be his last chance to get his career with Green Bay back on track. But I think it goes beyond that. I think the wide receivers have to step up. And one sort of overlooked thing, Tucker Kraft is by far the best blocking tight end on the Packers roster. And, you know, on the running game, on the jet sweeps, on the screen passes, you're going to miss him in that regard. But I think some of the wide receivers are going to have to do more. Some of the, you know, the backup tight ends, in addition to Luke Musgrave, whether it's Fitzpatrick or Wiley, these guys have to step up and raise their level of play, because Tucker Kraft was Jordan Love's best security blanket.
Easily. And I just think with this, where it's like, you're not going to replace Tucker Kraft. You're not. Like, the way you move him around, the way you use him as a blocker, but you could change the way you attack defenses. And Musgrave is more of a speed guy. He's more of a receiving threat. He's not a blocker. You can't make him something that he's not. And I wouldn't be surprised. You got the Super Bowl champs coming into town this week. I wouldn't be surprised if Matt LaFleur just says, hey, we're going to spread it out. We're going to throw the ball a lot. And it just seems like the passing game has been a lot stronger than the running game for this team on offense. So I think with this injury, it sucks. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it's horrible. But you could change the way, because you have those pieces, Gil, where you could change the way you attack a defense, because you do have a lot of athletes, and you have a fantastic athlete in Luke Musgrave, who Matt LaFleur and others have said, it's like, yeah, he's probably the best athlete of the receivers and tight ends. Like, that's right. Essentially, they've alluded to that, where you could do something with this, but you got to make an adjustment on offense.
Well, you got to play to the strengths of the guys who are out there, not to the guys who are no longer available. So it does mean adjustment. It means figuring out how to integrate Luke Musgrave into this offense. Now you got Christian Watson back. Hopefully Dontavian Wicks comes back by the end of November. Hopefully Jaden Reed is back. You've got a lot of weapons on this offense, but they're different weapons now that you don't have Tucker Kraft. So you got to make adjustments. You got to call plays that allow the players that are out there to excel. And, you know, you talk about Matt LaFleur being on the hot seat. One way to get off of the hot seat is to get this offense firing on all cylinders.
And I feel like too, Gil, it's like, I feel like you could spread it out where you could have, you know, you get your five linemen and you could have four receivers, and that's three receivers and a tight end, and you just flex out Musgrave. And then you have Josh Jacobs in the backfield. I feel like Josh Jacobs, he would get a lighter box if you show that you can throw on that too. And that may help the run game too. I feel like this team is very much set up where last year the run game set up the passing game. This year, I feel like the passing game has to set up the running game. It's a different dynamic this year, just because the run blocking has just simply not been as good as it was last year.
But that is, in my mind, one of the major adjustments that Matt LaFleur has yet to make.
Yeah.
And it's hurting this team because, you know, first and 10, Josh Jacobs gets a yard. Second and 9, Josh Jacobs gets 3 yards. Yep. And he probably should have lost 2, but he gained 3 because he's Josh Jacobs. But then 3rd and 5, you have to pass. And everyone knows run, pass. And everybody knows the screen pass and the jet. Like, it's too predictable right now.
Yeah.
And maybe the silver lining of losing Tucker Kraft, and I'm looking very hard for a silver lining here.
Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe the silver lining is it forces Matt LaFleur to do different things.
Yeah, and I think that's the best way you got to approach it. I'm with you there, Gil, for sure. So let's dive into this matchup though coming up this week, and let's look at the Packers' initial injury report that just came out on Thursday. First one, obviously, because they're not playing on Sunday, they're playing on Monday, so we're gonna know a little more on Saturday who's questionable, who's out, and such. But sounds like corner Nate Hobbs re-injured his knee, it sounds like, in Sunday's loss against Carolina. He may be out for a couple games. He's not practicing this week. Lucas Van Ness still dealing with the foot injury. He's out again so far. Savion Williams also had a foot injury against Carolina. He is out as of Thursday. Limited this week includes Aaron Banks, Edrin Cooper, Matthew Golden, Micah Parsons, Zach Tom, Quay Walker, Christian Watson, Dontavian Wicks, and Colby Wooden. Banks, Golden, and Wooden, they all left Sunday's loss against Carolina with respective injuries. Good to see, though, them all back on the practice field. Quay Walker was questionable going into that Carolina game with a calf issue. That's what he's listed with right now. And Dontavian Wicks, good to see him back practicing in some kind of capacity in a limited fashion, albeit, but hey, he's practicing, though. That's good. And then full participant Brandon McManus, who missed another kick. His job is definitely under fire right now with Lucas Havercheck sitting on the bench. Full participant right now with the right quad injury, but yeah, it's he needs to get healthy. He needs to figure out how to kick again because he may not be the Packer kicker much longer if stuff doesn't improve. Now, let's look at the Eagles offense and the Packers defense. Philly this year, their total offense, 24th overall in the league, which is crazy to see that when you got guys like Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley and A.J. Brown. They're 10th in scoring, 25th in passing, 19th in rushing. Green Bay, they are 5th in total defense. 8th best scoring defense, 9th best passing defense, and the 5th best rushing defense. A rushing defense, though, that showed some warts against Rico Dowdle and the Panthers on Sunday. Gil, what's a matchup that we should be looking forward to between the Philly offense and the Green Bay defense? They have that tush push that the Packers wanted to get rid of. So I bet that's probably a big topic of conversation in the Eagles film room coming up this week.
And we will see it, unfortunately, times in this game. I
wouldn't be surprised if it's
it.
The first offensive play for the Eagles on, yeah. on Monday. Wouldn't
I still would like to see it banned. It is not a football play. But look, until it is banned, you got to figure out a way to stop it. Let's stop complaining and do something about it. But, the Packers have to stop the run. And Saquon Barkley is such a big part of this offense. You know, he gained 2,000 yards last year. He's not quite as effective this year. But his last game before their bye against the Giants was his first 100-plus yard game of the year. You got to stop Saquon Barkley because he killed the Packers twice last year. And, you know, if you couldn't stop Dowdle last week, you got to do something different here against Barkley.
I feel like Saquon Barkley, he strikes so much fear in me as a Packer fan. He just always plays well against Green Bay. It just seems like when he was with the Giants, when he's with the Eagles, even though they kind of bottled him up last year in the playoffs. So they definitely focused on making Jalen Hurts try to beat them with his arm. And the Packers offense just didn't do much to help in that game last year in the playoffs and the wild card loss against the eventual Super Bowl champs. But yeah, that's the big matchup, Gil. And he is right now, he's only averaging about 4.1 yards per carry. He's got 6 total touchdowns. He's got just under 700 total yards receiving and rushing this season. Big matchup though, that I'm looking forward to. And obviously, the tush push, too. It's like we all know our opinions. I mean, tush push was 2 votes away from going away. So it's right. And I think it's going to get, I think it may be damn near unanimous next year if it gets put on the table again. But Jalen Hurts, though, against the Packers' pass rush integrity, that's the big thing there, where Jalen Hurts is having a solid year this season. He's completing 70% of his passes. He's 7th amongst QBs with a minimum of 100 passing attempts in that category, 7.8 yards per attempt, top 10 there. 15 passing touchdowns, only has 1 interception, a 114.4 pass rating. He's fifth in the league. And then five rushing touchdowns. He's firmly in the MVP race right now, Gil. And he's a guy, though, where you got to keep him in the pocket. He's been very good throwing the ball, but you got to keep him in the pocket. You got to be really disciplined. I know the Packers only had one sack last week that went for a 7-yard gain after a fumble, which is so weird and stupid. Just so many stupid things in that game on Sunday against Carolina. But you got to be really disciplined against Jalen Hurts.
You do. And, you know, the good news is this year the Packers have been better against running quarterbacks than they had been in the past. I think part of the reason that Jeff Hafley likes to play predominantly zone is because it keeps everybody's eyes on the quarterback.
Yeah.
And a running quarterback is less able to pick up those crucial first downs by scrambling. And then you add the fact that you've got Quay Walker and Edgerrin Cooper, two speedy off-ball linebackers who you could use as a spy or who can blitz up the middle. You've got options if you're Jeff Hafley, but you got to minimize the damage that Jalen Hurts does with his legs and with his arm. But to me, with his legs may be more important in the long run.
And you got to think last week too, where it's like the Packers were so close from getting a few sacks on Bryce Young too, and then he would just get out of the pocket. You know that they got to be hammering that this week. It's like, we cannot miss these tackles. Like, when we have an opportunity to get a guy, like, you got to keep contained and you got to keep him inside. You got to funnel him to your help. And that's essentially where the Packers are probably at, where, again, it's like the timing of the Carolina game could be very helpful for the Packers pass rush for sure. Just getting back to playing, doing your job, playing your gap, and just play and all hats to the football every single play. And Jalen Hurts is going to make you do that. He's going to stretch you all over the place. He's not going to make it easy, but yeah, the Packers, they got to be disciplined. They got to be way more disciplined on Monday if they're going to have a chance in this game coming up.
Now, the good news is the Eagles have allowed 25 sacks already this season, and that's with a mobile quarterback like Jalen Hurts. So if you can keep him in the pocket, he wants to hold on to that ball. I mean, it is possible Rashawn Gary and Micah Parsons have pretty good days if they hold that discipline.
Eighth most allowed sacks in the league this year by the Eagles. Which is crazy because their O-line's always really good. And it just seems like there are definitely some issues with the pass protection there right now along the front lines. The big thing is Green Bay, it's going to be so important to get ahead so then they can pin their ears back on defense. That's what happened against Carolina, where they never got a big enough lead where they forced Carolina to throw all the time, where you can have a consistent pass rush. Carolina was able to chew so much clock and just run their offense. That's the Packers can't have that happen. It's got to be complimentary football to a T, and especially against these guys, they got to be all dialed in. Now, let's go to the Packers offense against the Eagles defense. Let's look at some matchups there. Green Bay offensively, even though it was a disaster on Sunday, still eighth in the league in total offense. They're top 10 in scoring. They're 11th in scoring, 8th in passing, 16th in rushing. Philly total defense 23rd, a defense that was so dominant last year. They've kind of come back down to earth in a way. 19th scoring, 17th against the pass, 19th against the run. Gil, the Eagles added some pieces on that defense this week. They traded for Jalen Phillips and a familiar face in Jair Alexander. We thought we were going to see him in week 17. We're going to see him actually coming up right here in week 10. That's the matchup I think that I'm looking forward to, assuming that Jair Alexander does play on Monday.
Yeah, and I don't know how much he's going to play. And if he does, I don't know how well he's going to play. Obviously, he did not make a great impression in Baltimore either. So, you know, this is his third team in, 6 months? So,
yeah.
Not a great look in that respect. And he may be done as far as his days as a dominant cover corner. I hope he doesn't hear that because he'll use it as a bulletin board kind of inspiration. But ultimately, the Packers have a lot of receiving weapons. And even without Tucker Kraft, you got Matthew Golden, you got Romeo Doubs. Hopefully Wicks can come back and be ready. Christian Watson is healthy now. You got Luke Musgrave. Go out there and take advantage. The Eagles tried to address their cornerback depth because their third corner was a big problem for them throughout the first eight games of this season. But whether or not the two guys they brought in will know the playbook well enough to step in and make major contributions remains to be seen. And if you can get them to make a misread or a mistake, maybe you can get an extra splash play or two when they make a blown coverage.
Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean are their top two corners. They're obviously terrific players. You saw what they did last year in the playoffs, how good they are. The big thing I put Jair here on this matchup where he could very well be a healthy scratch. Even when he was on the field in Baltimore this year, he struggled immensely, and he was a healthy scratch for numerous games. Baltimore is one of the better run organizations, one of the better run football teams for a long time, and he couldn't make it there. It's just like, oh man. But just from the old Packer ties and how dominant he used to be, every time he's on the field, I'm going to be dialed in on that, Gil. I am. Where it's like, I just want to see how well does Jordan Love and Jair know each other? Like, how many secrets do they know? How many secrets does Jair Alexander know about the Green Bay receivers?
Right.
It's going to be very interesting whenever he's on the field, if he is deemed active for this game on Monday.
Yeah, it will be interesting. And what I would really love to see, and maybe I'm being a little selfish here, I want to see Jair Alexander in a situation where he has to make a tackle, where he has to come up and be physical, because he hasn't done it in a long time. And I would take the receiver more often than not in that situation.
Yeah, it's going to – I feel like there's going to be a lot of noise if a big play is made against Jair. It's going to be weird. It's going to be very weird to see him at Lambeau Field in a different jersey. Now, we were expected to see him in Week 17 in a Baltimore Ravens jersey, but obviously things changed. He got traded, and so be it. But I do want to say one more matchup, though, that is worth watching for sure, because this could determine the game, and this could determine – how successful or not successful the Packers are on Monday. It's the Packers interior O-line against Jalen Carter and the Eagles D-line. The interior D-line for the Eagles, because Packers interior O-line has been a big, big struggle right now. Jalen Carter can wreck a game by himself. If you don't have a plan against that guy, you're not going to get much traction going on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, he is dangerous. And, you know, the Packers offensive line, the interior – I've been very disappointed in Elgton Jenkins, and I'm a big Elgton Jenkins fan.
Me too.
He hasn't done the job I expected him to do when he moved from guard to center. We know Sean Ryan struggles at times. Aaron Banks hasn't been able to stay in the lineup. Jordan Morgan can't seem to establish himself at either guard or tackle, and he's a better pass protector than run blocker. So, It's a little bit of a mess right now, that Packers interior offensive line, and Carter will be a big challenge.
Hey, further evidence where, hey, just lean into the passing game a little more. Lean into the passing game just a little more, Gil. Let's go over some quick stats and figures before we move on to some predictions and then some trivia. Turnover ratio this year, the Packers are at dead even zero. The Eagles are plus four. Packers and Eagles give away the ball less than most of anybody. The Packers have five giveaways this year. The Eagles have the fewest giveaways in the NFL with only three. But the Packers and Eagles don't take the ball away a lot that much either. Packers only have five takeaways. The Eagles only have seven takeaways. It's just very weird. Two teams who were very good taking the football away a season ago. Total penalties. Green Bay has tied for eighth most in penalties this year. Just lack of discipline was very evident on Sunday in that loss against Carolina. And that should not be Carolina. That should be Philly. On the graphic right there on YouTube, Philly is tied for eighth fewest in penalties this season. Third downs this year, Green Bay, even though they struggled mightily and it was very frustrating at times, many times for the third down offense on Sunday, they're still second in third down offense in the league this year. On defense, they're sixth in third down. Philly's offense tied for fourth worst in third down, and their defense seventh worst in the league on third down. Red zone touchdown percentage, Green Bay's offense, 62.9%, 11th overall in the league. Defensively, 63.6%, that's 23rd. Philly's offense with the tush push and everything, they're first in the league in red zone offense. You know that, 85% this year, just a ridiculous number. And then their defense, 46.2% in the red zone. They don't give up a lot of touchdowns. They're third in the NFL. They're very good. They're very stout when it matters most. Eagles injury report, we'll just brush over this real quick too. Not practicing on Thursday, center Cam Jurgens dealing with a knee. Limited participants with concussions, cornerback Adoree Jackson and defensive tackle Moro Ojiamo. And then full participants include running back Saquon Barkley, who's dealing with a groin, wide receiver A.J. Brown dealing with a hamstring, and offensive lineman Willie Lampkin dealing with a knee and ankle. He is designated to return to the 53-man roster. And then currently on the IR and PUP list includes cornerback Ja'Coryon Bennett, safety Marcus Epps, linebacker Azeez Ojulari, and linebacker Nolan Smith Jr. Nolan Smith Jr. and Ja'Coryon Bennett are both practicing as well. They're both designated to return to the team. We could see them on Monday coming off the bye. Yo, why does Green Bay win on Monday?
Green Bay wins on Monday if they play complimentary football and mistake-free football. They cannot beat themselves. And unfortunately, it's a running theme this season that they make it harder on themselves than they have to. The play calling has to be better. The penalties have to be reduced. Mm-hmm. And they have to play to their potential.
They got to finish their drives in the end zone on offense. That if they could do that consistent, they could do that on a more consistent basis. They definitely have a puncher's chance in this one. I think they have a great chance. If Green Bay plays their best football, they could beat anybody. They really can. But they've shown it already. Yeah, and I would say also where you got to prevent short yardage situations against Philly. The fewer short yardage situations that Philly can exploit, the better chances for your team winning. Why does Green Bay lose?
Green Bay loses if they can't stop Saquon Barkley and if they lose the turnover battle.
If the defense can't get off the field again like against Carolina and the O-line has trouble against a very stout Eagles front, it's going to be a long night for the Packers. Gil, what's your prediction for Monday?
Yeah, it's hard. This is a tough one. I think the Packers will be up for this game. I think they will play better, but I think they will fall just short. I've got the Eagles 30 and the Packers with their magic 27.
See, I'm not going 27 because when they score 27, they win.
Yeah.
But I have the Eagles also scoring 30 and the Packers scoring 24. I think they're going to play better than they did against Carolina. But Philly I feel like they're the defending champs for a reason. They're gonna get their stuff together. The bye week is probably good timing for them. But I could very well see the Packers winning this game. I could. Where it's just because that's just what happens with this team. I feel like where it's like, okay, you lose to Carolina, but then I was literally texting other people where it's like I could very well see the Packers somehow winning against Philly on Monday. You know, so but I do think the Packers they play better, but they fall just a little bit short. Gil, what articles do you have coming up on Packers Post and Cheesehead TV?
On the Packers Post, I took a look at the gamble that Brian Gutekunst took at cornerback this offseason and how it's kind of blowing up in his face. And over at Cheesehead TV, I talked about the need to turn Matthew Golden loose in the second half of the season. Time to get him cooking in this offense and kind of wondering why they're scheming plays open for Savion Williams, but never for Matthew Golden. I don't understand that at all.
They're going to let if Matt LaFleur is smart and he coaches the team he has, they will lean more into that passing attack and Matthew Golden's going to get a little more involved, I hope. So let's see what happens. Gil, ready for some trivia?
I am ready for some trivia.
All right, well, we know how much the Packers, they love their Georgia Bulldogs. The Eagles also love their former Bulldogs as well. Packers and Eagles both roster the most former Georgia players amongst all NFL teams. Gil, how many former Georgia Bulldogs are currently with the Packers and Eagles?
Total combined,
yeah.
9.
No, it's actually higher.
Wow.
Yeah.
11.
Higher.
Oh, I'm just guessing at this point. What do you got?
13 wow. Former Georgia Bulldogs. The Packers have 6. The Eagles, they have 7. Pretty high number between, and I believe there's about 57 former Georgia Bulldogs currently in the NFL, and 13 belong to 2 teams. The Packers, they're 6. They're all currently on the 53-man roster. Those 6 are Devontae Wyatt, Quay Walker, Javon Bullard, John Fitzpatrick, Warren Brinson and Nazir Stackhouse. And the Eagles, they have 7. 5 of them are currently on the 53-man roster. Those 5 are Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, Nakobe Dean, Keeley Ringo, and Smail Mondon Jr. And the other 2, Azeez Ojulari and Nolan Smith Jr., are both on the IR for the Eagles. And in case you're curious, the Ravens, they are 3rd with 5 former Bulldogs currently on their roster over in the AFC. So, yeah, Philly and the Packers, they love their Georgia boys, Gil.
Apparently so. And, you know, it helps when you're winning national championships year after year to get a little more notice. And the talent down there is obviously very, very high.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's and the Eagles and the Packers, again, they meet up on Monday Night Football at Lambeau Field. Sounds like there's a chance of snow in the forecast, Gil. We may get our first snow globe game of the season. Eagles 6-2, Packers 5-2-1. The NFC, the top of the NFC, if you look at those standings, they're tight. This is a very critical game for both these teams. Should be a really good one. Let's hope the Packers, they can get back on the right track and get a big win against the defending champs.
We need it. We need it, especially after the last game and how frustrating that was.
Yeah, they need to turn the page quick. And they, yeah, it's just, I don't know if it can get much worse than the way they played on Sunday. So I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful, Gil, but you gotta still go do it.
Yes, gotta go do it. Gotta go do it. All right. Well, that is gonna do it for us today. We'll be right back here next week. Follow us on Twitter at Gil Packers and at Gil Packers Sean. Stay up to date on all things Packers or to ask us questions. Or you could email us at gbpackersean@gmail.com. Make sure you're subscribed to Packers Talk on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Big thanks to PackersTalk.com for powering our show. Thank you for listening. Until next time, go Pack Go!
Go Pack Go!